You're with us for the morning show on this election day. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So here's what we know. Wisconsin's 1,922 clerks will be put to the test today. There's a surge of COVID and the crush of nearly 1.9 million absentee ballots with counting just underway in the last minutes. And then making sure that there are enough workers to staff the polls until they close at 8 tonight. What is your election day like? What will you do on this day? What is it like where you are now? Report in, share what you see, 800-642-1234. Patrick Marley is politics and state government reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Patrick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, plot us out if you could. It's likely we won't be seeing the results in Wisconsin any time today, perhaps in the wee hours of the morning. But what will we know about the count and when? What can you help us understand?
So polls close at 8. As you mentioned, election officials are starting the count now. So people are showing up at the polls and voting, and those get fed into tabulators right as they vote. And then perhaps on the other side of the room, they're taking the absentee ballots in many communities and feeding those through the machines. And so that process of counting absentee ballots takes much longer than counting in-person votes that are cast today. And because we've seen such an incredible increase in mail voting, it's going to take a lot longer. I think Milwaukee is estimating that 3 a.m. at the earliest. Again, that's the earliest. It could take considerably longer than that. I talked to an election clerk yesterday who said he thought that some communities might not be done until Wednesday or Thursday with their counts.
Why does it take a lot longer to count absentee ballots than in-person voting?
Because they have to take them out of the envelope. They have to announce the voter just like they do at the table when you go to vote in person. They then unfold the ballot and put it into the machine. And, you know, sometimes because of the way it's folded or because of an error the voter made, it can't be read by the machine. And so they then have to figure out what the problem is and fix it if they can. For instance, if it got mangled in the mail, they would have to take that ballot, recreate it on a second ballot and destroy the first one. Or I guess they probably preserve the first one, but obviously they only cast one of them. And so that just takes a lot longer than individual voters putting them into the machines.
It's like each ballot is its own specimen, if you will.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's always taken longer with absentee ballots. It's often the fact that Milwaukee takes a lot longer to count its vote than other places because of the sheer number of ballots it has to deal with. And, you know, think back to the 2018 election. It was late at night when we got those final results mm-hmm. in the governor's race. It's going to be much later than that this time because, you know, the number of absentee ballots is just demolished past records.
And state law requires an initial tally to be done by 4 in the afternoon Wednesday. Given the sheer volume of absentee ballots and the process that it takes to process them, will we be able to meet that deadline?
So that would be on a community-by-community basis. Probably most communities will easily meet that deadline. There may be some that have trouble meeting it. And, you know, we have to cross that bridge when we get to it in terms of what that means. You know, there's also a requirement under state law and, you know, that says all ballots must be counted that were legally cast. And so those two things would be in conflict. There's a potential there would be a legal challenge, but, you know, there would be a strong argument that any ballot that was legally cast needs to be counted, even if a clerk can't meet a technical deadline in the law.
And Milwaukee has a central site, right? A central count site for those absentee ballots. Does that help the process along in any way?
So there's two ways to count absentee ballots. Milwaukee is one that uses this central count. Madison is a place that doesn't. So in Madison, they distribute all the absentee ballots to the individual polling location. So if you send in your absentee ballot, they would have that ballot taken to the polling place where you ordinarily would vote, and they would just be processed by the poll workers there during lulls throughout the day. That's the way most communities do it. 39, including Milwaukee, send all of their absentee ballots to one location and have them counted there. They just do the absentee ballots there. I don't know that one way is better than another. You'd find different advocates for each system.
Mm-hmm.
Like so much in election law in Wisconsin, a lot of decisions get to be made at the local level, and there's a lot of mid-sized cities in the state that use a central count facility. The state's largest city does, but Madison, its second largest, does not.
Talking with Patrick Marley, covers state government and politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's here to give us the latest developments on Election Day with your insights and what you are seeing at the polls. Join in at 800-642-1234. What are your questions about Election Day? What do you want to know about how ballots are counted or correcting mistakes on absentee ballots? Anything else? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Patrick, how can voters ensure, how can they check to make sure their absentee ballot has been received and counted?
The best way to do that is to use the state's web portal, which is myvote.wi.gov. That's where many people requested their absentee ballot in the first place. They can go on there, and there's a tracking system that will say when you requested your ballot, when it was sent to you by the clerk, and then when it was received by the clerk. If you don't have access to that, you can call your local clerk to find out. Today being Election Day may not be the best day to make that call if you haven't already. Also, it's important not to get overly anxious if you look on the My Vote site and find that it says your ballot hasn't been received. There may be a problem, but it may be something unrelated to your ballot. It's possible that there was some kind of glitch that they didn't record it on the website as having received it, even though they've got your ballot and are counting it. So if you're not on that site and you think you should be, follow up with your local clerk. You can find out what the situation is.
And it would have been, if there is an issue, it would have been an issue on the envelope itself, because those envelopes aren't opened until this morning, until Election Day.
Right. So that site would tell you whether it had been received or
mm-hmm.
not.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. The clerks, when they get them before Election Day, will check them. Absentee ballots that are sent in by mail have to have your signature, a witness's signature, and a witness's address. If it doesn't have one of those things, they won't count it. Most clerks, though, if they receive them before Election Day, will get back in touch with the voter, tell them about the problem, and give them a chance to rectify it. So those are errors that are correctable before Election Day. Now, on Election Day, if they open the ballot and they feed it into the machine and it won't be counted because, say, someone voted for the same candidate or two candidates for the same office, they voted for both Trump and Biden, obviously that's not allowed. You can only count one candidate. And so then your vote would be rejected.
Your vote would be rejected. And that is something that you give up as an absentee voter, I understand, that if that ballot is faulty in some way, that's it.
That's correct. If you vote in person and you do the example I just gave, enter two people on it, you put it in the machine, the machine won't accept it. And then you can figure out, with the help of a poll worker, if you need to, what went wrong. You could get a new ballot or find another way to fix your ballot. If you've mailed it in and you've made that kind of error, it's too late. You won't get another chance.
We have Patrick Marley at our side on this Election Day. He's politics and state government reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Did you make a plan to vote? And did that plan unfold the way you anticipated? Are you waiting in line now? What do you see around you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Patrick Marley right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show on this Election Day. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So the sheer volume of ballots to count on this Election Day is a task that Wisconsin's 1,922 clerks have been preparing for months. We've had a number of clerks on our program this election cycle, meeting voters where they are, providing clarity in the system, providing answers to all the voting questions, all in the pursuit of election integrity and boosting confidence in the process. What is this day like for you? What do you want to know about our swing state on Election Day? Join in at 800-642-1234. Patrick Marley is politics and state government reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he's our guide. Let's bring in Craig now, joining us from Plover with a question about absentee ballots. Hi, Craig.
Good morning, Kate and Patrick. Before the break, Patrick, I believe you were speaking of absentee voting and the way the clerks treat the ballot envelope when it's returned. My question is just a clarification for my understanding and all voters. I believe, if I understood you correctly, you spoke about receiving a ballot by the clerk, and they open the ballot, check it for signatures and all the appropriate things that need to be on there. And then I believe a short moment later, you indicated when they open the ballot on voting day. I'm curious to know which it is. With all the angst around this election, that clarification, I think, would be helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Sure. Thanks for that question. So what happens, when you get an absentee ballot, you mark it just like a regular ballot that you get at the polls. It's the same ballot. You put it into an envelope, and then on the outside of the envelope, you sign it. You have a witness sign it who saw you go through the voting process, so they didn't necessarily see, they shouldn't have seen how you marked your ballot, but that you were the one who marked the ballot. The witness signs his or her name on the envelope and puts his or her address. You mail that envelope back to the clerk. The clerk receives the ballot and can all the information that they can check prior to Election Day is on the ballot. They can see that the voter signed it, the witness provided his or her name, and can contact the voter if there's any problem with any aspect of that and rectify it. The clerk cannot and will not open it prior to Election Day. That's part of the reason it takes as long to count ballots in Wisconsin. They can't start processing them until 7 a.m. on Election Day when the polls open. So the clerks will have arranged all their ballots, made sure that there's no technical problems like with signatures prior to Election Day. And then once Election Day starts, they take out that first absentee ballot. They pull it out of the envelope. They unfold the ballot. They feed it through the machine.
Craig, thanks for the question and the clarification there. Patrick, let's shift gears to the campaigning that's been going on. The president was campaigning in Kenosha last night. You covered that rally. What did you hear?
So yeah, the president, as much as he did in 2016, has made a relentless number of visits to Wisconsin. He's been here, I think, five times in the last just over 2 weeks. Kenosha was one of his last stops. He had another stop in Michigan after that very late last night. His speech in Kenosha was much like the others that he had delivered recently. Big emphasis on law and order, downplaying of the coronavirus pandemic, claiming, frankly, without evidence, that we're rounding the corner and that it will be over soon. And really trying to show voters here that he views Wisconsin as very important. You know, in 2016, Hillary Clinton didn't come to the state during the general election, part of a campaign, which in hindsight, Democrats saw as a big mistake. Trump has been coming here a lot. Biden has come to Wisconsin some as well, but he's had a much slower campaign. I shouldn't say slower, but fewer campaign stops generally, fewer in Wisconsin because of the pandemic. He has not campaigned as vigorously as the president.
We're talking with Patrick Marley, who covers state government and politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's at our side this Election Day morning, and we're taking your questions and what you see on this Election Day. 800-642-1234. Patrick, there's been a lot of talk about the WOW counties of the southeastern, the Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington counties, the Milwaukee suburbs that have traditionally been a Republican stronghold. What do you see out of those counties?
So that's been an area that, like you said, has always been the bedrock of Republicanism in Wisconsin. And it has faltered a little bit in the Trump era. Democrats are really hoping to make gains there. Polling has shown the president has been less popular there, and he's seen you know, that balanced out by support more in rural areas that helped him in 2016. Democrats are hoping to make inroads. Obviously, Trump won Wisconsin by a very narrow margin in 2016. The Democrats are hoping to overcome that by increasing turnout in Milwaukee and Dane County, the two strongest Democratic areas, making gains elsewhere and chipping into the Republican base in the Wow counties. They're also hoping that will give them some headway in legislative races and that they might be able to gain some seats in the state assembly that really haven't been competitive before because they've been so strongly Republican previously.
How important is Milwaukee in this election? What big of a force is Milwaukee?
Well, it's the most populous city in the state, and it's very Democratic. So what really needs to happen is the Democrats need to get good turnout there in order to win the presidency. Dane County is the other very blue part of the state, and they have consistent sky-high turnout there. So the Democrats really need to get an emphasis on Milwaukee to see turnout at a high enough level that they can win the presidency in Wisconsin.
What do you make of Wisconsin's high number of absentee ballots and what type of leanings those absentee voters might have on this election?
So I think the shift to absentee ballots isn't a huge surprise given what we've seen nationally and the dry run that Wisconsin had in April when we had our presidential primary and our race for state Supreme Court. There you saw this very quick shift to mail voting in numbers unlike anything we'd ever seen. And I think that kind of laid the marker down for everyone that would be happening this fall, and it has happened this fall. As for what you can glean about what that means, I think it would be safe to say that the Democrats are winning the early vote, but, you know, that can be caught up to by the Republicans in the election day vote. Also, you know, there are lots of Republicans who are voting early or did vote early as well. We don't have party registration to vote in Wisconsin, and so you can't look at a spreadsheet and say there are X number of Republican votes and Y number of Democratic votes. You can look at demographic data. You know, votes that came in Dane County and Milwaukee County are going to be more Democratic. Votes that came in from rural areas are probably going to be more Republican. The Wow counties are maybe harder to read than they normally would be because of the shift. So I think it's a fool's errand to try to overinterpret what we know so far, just as everybody should be very cautious as they watch results come in tonight. It's going to take longer. The early returns are not going to be determinative of what the final results are. Everybody should take a breath and not be confident that they know where things are going until we have adequate data.
Just breathe. Let's go to Scott now, joining us from New Glarus. Hi, Scott.
Yes, good morning. I'm wondering if you can shed some light on the college student voting. Are they on campus voting? Are they at home voting? They've traditionally had trouble on campus getting the right IDs and all that sort of thing. I wonder if you have any info on that.
Scott, thanks. How has college voting played out in this election cycle, Patrick?
That's a great question, and I wish I knew a little bit more about it because the pandemic has changed college life just like it's changed life for everybody. And so what I don't know is whether students are sometimes staying at home, whether their home is in Wisconsin or another state, and then if they're voting absentee or if they're voting in their home communities, they would have some leeway as to which way they would go. They will be voting on campuses today. They do have polling places there. Wisconsin does have a voter ID law, and it can be tricky for some students. For instance, a student from out of state would have the option of voting in Wisconsin, but they would need to have a Wisconsin driver's license or a Wisconsin student ID to do that. Obviously, they couldn't vote in their home state if they chose to vote in Wisconsin. And the student ID rules are more complex than they are for a Wisconsin driver's license. So it is true that sometimes students face some hurdles with voter ID that other voters don't face.
Patrick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Patrick Marley covers state government and politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up, we talk with a family physician from a tribal clinic for the Menominee Nation and learn how she is helping her patients limit the spread of COVID among the Menominee. That's right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. As cases of COVID surge in Wisconsin, we're checking in on a tribal clinic that serves the healthcare needs of the Menominee Indian Tribe of Wisconsin. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Menominee County, which is home to the Menominee Reservation, has the highest rate of COVID cases in the state. The county is the least healthy county in the state, according to annual county health rankings. Are you a member of the Menominee? What are you experiencing with COVID cases? Are you able to stay safe and healthy? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Amy Slagle is a family physician at the Menominee Tribal Clinic. Dr. Slagle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Good morning. Can you explain for us what you are seeing at your clinic and how the Menominee Nation is affected by COVID?
Well, what we've seen is a huge spike in cases that have occurred over the last 2 months. On September 2nd, we had only our 19th case. We've done great for 6 months, keeping it at bay and out of our population. By October 2nd, we were up to 115 cases, and yesterday we topped 300. So it spread like wildfire, which was our greatest concern, that once we saw the virus with a foothold, that it would really just go crazy, and it really has. We have not had a super spreader event or any huge gathering that's caused this. It's been almost entirely from small gatherings and visiting, family visiting each other, people having rides together. But as expected, after the rise in cases come the hospitalizations. We've had a total of 25 hospitalizations, and we have 7 in the hospital today, 2 of them intubated. So it's become quite serious quite quickly.
Where is the nearest hospital? How far do people have to go?
Shawano has a critical care hospital, which is part of the ThetaCare system, mm-hmm. and that is a small hospital. We have 20-some beds, and we're now expanding to a surge capacity. So as a critical care hospital, we can take care of folks there if they don't need an intensivist or intensive care. But if things get worse, then we have to try to find a bed elsewhere, which is becoming increasingly difficult.
Your clinic is running a drive-through testing site. How is that going? What are you seeing?
Oh, it goes quite well. We're actually in a transition spot right now because we're building a weather and winter worthy test through site in our parking lot by the clinic. But people call for appointments, and it goes quite smoothly, and we can do up to 80 tests a day going through that drive through. We have to allocate doctors and nurse practitioners and nurses to that endeavor, so it takes away from the regular care that we can provide. But we do feel like we meet the demand for testing. I always wish that we could do more testing. We're having the National Guard come every other week now through December to help with that. But the testing is fine. The Indian Health Service has been very helpful with getting us the testing supplies that we need. So thus far, we've had no problems with that since the beginning when everyone had problems getting testing. So the testing's okay. Could we do more? Yes, but I think we're meeting the demand so far.
At the clinic, have you had to put off preventative health visits or other preventative services to switch the focus to COVID?
Oh, yes. You know, in the beginning, we shut down preventive care and actually most usual care, like regular checkups, well child care. We shut all that down initially in March and April. We were able to dial that back up, dial it back down. It kind of depends on on what the tribe is doing in general with their reopening plans. Currently, we are actually seeing most things again. So people are able to get in for their chronic care. We've got what we believe to be a very good safety plan and PPE plan in place here, so we've not seen any transmission of virus within the clinic. We moved all of our pharmacy services outside. So that
cuts like down outdoors on. Outside?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We have a curbside service using, we had to hire people to register people with iPads, and then we had to hire people to run prescriptions, run in with the registration information and run out with the medications. And our pharmacists, too, are stationed outside every day providing consultation. We're also building some more weather-worthy winter digs for that as well. But basically, the pharmacists will still be talking to people outside all winter, and we'll deliver the meds, and that will keep hundreds of people out of the clinic every day picking up prescriptions.
Wow. So these pharmacists will have to really have their winter gear, that, you know, warm winter jackets and their snowsuits.
Yes, we're investing in all those things for them. Wow. We also have a warming building where they'll be able to stay warm inside, and with computer access out in the parking lot. We bought some specialized medical buildings, and we're building out buildings where people can park with wind and weather protection, the same for our testing platform, which will be in the opposite parking lot. So we're trying to keep pharmacy and COVID testing outside despite the Wisconsin weather.
Mm. Where have you looked for guidance? How have you learned how to do these things?
Well, a lot of it has just been by hook and crook, but the main thing we've done is we've maintained an incident command both on the tribal level and the clinic level since March, and that those groups of leaders meet regularly twice a week and have done so since March, and we just keep problem solving. We've been able to utilize a lot of the CARES funds, the COVID funding, to basically pay for some of these things because they're all related to COVID. Certainly, we would not have been able to do it without those funds. The Indian Health Service, as I said, supplied us with the testing materials, but it's just been a lot of by hook and crook, finding things and coming up with new ideas and trying to find innovative and different ways to deliver care.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Amy Slagle, who is a family physician at the Menominee Tribal Clinic. You can join in with your questions about COVID, what you're seeing. Are you a member of the Menominee Nation or another tribal nation? What is COVID like in your community? Do you feel your health is in jeopardy, or are you concerned about the choices you have to make to help limit the spread? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Slagle, you've been talking a lot about moving these things outdoors, but have you taken any investment in telehealth, or what type of work is telehealth doing right now in your practice?
Well, we do a lot of nursing home visits by telehealth. We don't have a lot of the fancy telehealth things, and part of it is just because so much of our reservation has very bad internet service and bad phone service. So we're happy if we can reach people by phone a lot of the time. So we do schedule telephone visits, and if folks do have the capability to do a Skype visit or a Zoom meeting, those things are possible. But for the most part, our telephone visits have been the way that we've reached out to folks with their with chronic problems to try to follow up with them.
And I'm sure that was similar to how you would follow up before making those phone calls to make sure things are going as planned.
Well, yeah. It's been tough. It's been tough. I feel like there's been a lot of collateral damage to COVID that's hard to measure.
Okay.
Folks that just have not come in when they should have with new problems because they wanted to avoid possible exposure in the clinic and because we did have to limit who we could see.
Yeah. Let's bring in Tyler now in Green Bay. Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I work for the Menominee Indian School District. Excuse me. And I am very happy with the amount of communication that I am receiving from the health department on Menominee Reservation. And they're doing a very good job of keeping people informed about what's going on and what the thought process is and why they're doing the things they're doing and really trying to urge people to stay away from potential problems like the Shawnee County Fair and stuff like that. So I just thought they were doing a really good job with that.
Tyler, thank you for sharing that. Dr. Slagle, communication is key, and Tyler appreciates it.
Well, we've tried really hard to keep public communication going. We have the advantage of being a small community. So since the very first week in March when we started, I was basically tasked with being, as a public health officer for the tribe, educating people about COVID. So almost every week, I've been writing a public service announcement, trying to motivate people to do the right things, making sure people understand what the public health tools are to prevent infection, just trying to get the message out about masks.
Do you sense fatigue?
Oh, absolutely, and that's basically the biggest contributor to our surge. I think folks just got tired. They just got tired of not seeing their family, not visiting their friends. And paradoxically, we did shut down the tribe two different times, and that gave many people a lot of time on their hands, and they just became sick of not being able to socialize and be with their families. So we've actually brought people back to 50% capacity at work now, thinking that at least if we have our safety plans in place, that's less opportunity to visit and potentially spread virus.
Family physician Amy Slagle is with us from the Menominee Tribal Clinic. As COVID cases surge, we're checking in on the health of the Menominee Nation. What do you think of the latest surge of cases across the state? What do you think is leading to the increased spread? Has your tribal nation discussed a plan for how a vaccine will go out once it's available? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with family physician Amy Slagle of the Menominee Tribal Clinic. The clinic is northeast of Green Bay. We've seen COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths spike in Wisconsin in recent weeks, recent months. The Department of Health Services announced last week 71 new free community testing sites in 56 counties and 7 tribal nations. Dr. Slagle, you mentioned mask wearing and the importance of wearing masks. What do you see there? Are people in your community wearing them?
They are wearing them most of the time, especially when they're shopping or going in stores or businesses or tribal buildings. Certainly when they come in the clinic, they must have one on. And in fact, we have a tribal resolution that says you need to wear a mask in public. And I think in that regard, people do very well. It seems like it's the visiting family, people sharing rides. Those seem to be the places where the masks are somewhat forgotten. We'd like to push that harder. We would like, especially in in households where there are multi-generational families living and there are folks who would have a high risk of being quite ill or even dying from COVID. If someone's positive in that household, we would love to see more mask wearing during that illness to protect the vulnerable, protect the elderly. So we've done well with masks in public. We need to expand that out to wearing it more in more personal social situations.
Looking at those social situations, the Menominee recently announced that casinos and other facilities will be reopening at 50% capacity. What do you make of that decision, considering the rise in cases?
Well, it was really hard. And basically, it came down to the knowledge that while we had the casino open, we did not have a single instance of proven transmission which occurred at the casino. They've had a very good safety plan in place. Mask wearing is absolutely required inside the casino, and they've got a very stringent cleaning, disinfecting, and social distancing plan in place, and the staff and the management are very committed to enforcing that. So while in the perfect world, we would love to close down everything, it's just not possible. So the next best thing is to do it, but do it very safely.
Menominee County grapples with poor health, being one of the least healthy counties in our state. And certainly there are comorbidities to deal with COVID. What is that like?
Well, it's pretty terrifying, actually. That's why we worked so hard to keep COVID out of here for the first 6 months of the pandemic, because we knew the large number of folks who have multiple comorbidities, placing them at risk for COVID complications and death, is so high by percentage in our county. So much diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, obesity. Those things are just setups for very bad outcomes with COVID. And we are now starting to see some of those things happen. Unfortunately, we had the first death from a tribal member on the reservation yesterday. So we have many people in the hospital now, so we're starting to see the effects of what happens when folks who struggle with chronic disease in the background then struggle with COVID.
We're talking with Dr. Amy Slagle, who is a family physician at the Menominee Tribal Clinic, and getting her insights as we look at the spread of COVID and the work to contain the spread. You can join in with your questions and what you see in your tribal nation, 800-642-1234. Dr. Slagle, you mentioned earlier working with Indian Health Service, and the agency is, you know, an agency of the Department of Health and Human Services. What has that work been like at the federal level?
Well, the IHS itself deals with the federal agencies, thank God, but they serve as a conduit between Washington and us, and they've been a tremendous resource in consultation service. They've helped in many ways. For instance, they just arranged for us, we're going to have the CDC come with a opportunity to do a video safety evaluation. We're going to do a video tour of the clinic, show them what we're doing for safety, and hopefully get some good feedback about what we could do even better. The Indian Health Service helped arrange that. They help us get more test kits when we need it. They provide all kinds of background information. They're providing us vaccine information. The Indian Health Service has been invaluable in helping us fight this virus.
Do you have enough test kits and PPE at this point?
The PPE we're well stocked with at the moment,
okay.
And we count every piece that gets used every day and every piece that comes in. So we use the CDC burn calculator for everything from hand soap to N95 masks. So PPE, we've done well. We've really scavenged from many places to get it. The test kits are more of a worry. We have the rapid test from Abbott that the federal government has supplied to us. However, that contract with Abbott apparently runs out December 31st, and there's no guarantee or any even inkling of whether or not that's going to continue. We will be able to get test kits and have from our reference hospital in Shawano, as well as the state of Wisconsin. There are other places we can get it, but we can't get the rapid test from anywhere but the Indian Health Service. We've been trying to establish a contract with Abbott privately to ensure those test kits keep coming, and that has been fraught with very annoying red tape so far.
The tests that are happening in your parking lot, are those rapid tests, or are they ones coming from the state?
It's a combination.
Okay.
We use the rapid test for folks who clearly have symptoms.
Uh-huh.
We are somewhat limited. The test cannot sit for more than 1 hour before it's run, so that limits how many we can do an hour. So acutely symptomatic people generally get the rapid test. We try to follow state DHS guidelines in trying to test as many direct contacts as possible. And because those people are already in quarantine, we tend to use the send-out test for that because it's not as important to get that result back quickly because they're already confined and quarantined.
I want to ask you this because over the next months and the future vaccine coming down the pike, what is the plan for the Menominee and the plan with Indian Health Service as to how vaccines will be distributed?
Well, I think all the tribes are right in the middle of getting that sorted out right now. Every tribe has the choice of getting vaccine through the Indian Health Service or through the state of Wisconsin. It just so happens that we are very experienced with getting vaccines from the state. We have a very good relationship with the DHS. So we are choosing to get our vaccine supply through the state. Because we still don't know what the vaccine, which vaccine or vaccines are going to come and what their specifics are, it's hard to plan. But we've had, we have a working group that's trying to digest every bit of information that comes out and come up with a mass vaccine plan. It'll be done in phases. We'll get healthcare workers and other critical care workers, some aggregate setting folks vaccinated first.
Mm-hmm.
Move to the more general public. So we are planning as well as we can without actually knowing what we're going to get.
Dr. Slagle, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate your interest in the Menominee Tribe.
Amy Slagle, family physician at the Menominee Tribal Clinic. Just ahead on this election day, we talk with two political experts about what the country is divided on and whether the election can heal those divisions. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.